Like the Saturn V, and unlike, for example, the space shuttle, this vehicle has an additional capability. Because it has an upper stage, it is not limited to sending payloads to low Earth orbit. It can use the upper stage to throw payloads far beyond low Earth orbit. It can throw 47 tons on a direct trajectory to Mars, or 59 to the Moon. And that's how we want to do the mission. Just lift and throw and let it go. Send the payload to the planet with the upper stage of the booster that lifted it to space in the first place. That's how we've done every real unmanned planetary mission, you know, like Curiosity and Viking and Voyager. That's how we did the real Apollo missions to the moon, okay? You know, and if we can do the Mars mission that way, instead of by going to orbit and assembling Battlestar Galactica spaceships and orbiting space harbors and so forth, if we can just do direct throw, right there you've gone 90% of the way towards taking the mission out of the science fiction future and putting it in our world of real engineering. But how can you do that? The Death Star that I showed you and similar concepts weighs 1,000 tons or so. The booster that could lift that in one launch, it would be quite difficult to develop, and you'd blow away Orlando when you took off, which would be bad for morale at the Cape. So what else can you do? How can you do a Mars mission with a Saturn V class booster if it's 1,000 tons? Well, 1,000 divided by 120 is around 8. You could divide the mission up into 8 chunks and rendezvous in various places in Earth orbit and interplanetary space and Martian orbit on the Martian surface or some combination of such maneuvers and somehow put the mission together that way. And you could design a Mars mission that way. In fact, I actually know someone who once did design a Mars mission that way, and that's why he's out of the business, because that's really stupid, okay? If you have a mission and it requires 8 launches, they're all mission critical, and one goes in the drink, you lose the whole mission. So that is not a reasonable plan. Now, I and a fair number of other people are willing to count on 2 launches both working. Okay, but 1,000 by 2 is 500. It's still much too much for a Saturn V class booster. So what else could you do? Well, how about getting the mass down? Why is the mass of the Death Star so big? If you look at the Death Star itself, and similar concepts, there's a variety of them one could choose from, what you see is that about 75% of the mass that it is sending to Mars is the propellant to come home. Why do we need to do that? Well, it might seem prudent. I mean, shouldn't, if you go to Mars, bring the propellant to come home? That would seem to be a pretty good idea. Well, it might seem that way, but you have to ask yourself, is that how people have actually explored on Earth? You know, in my country, the most noteworthy episode of exploration is the mission of Lewis and Clark. Couple of explorers, actually, they had 25 other guys with them, so there were 27 of them. But anyway, they crossed the North America from east to west and back again around 1804. It took 3 years. Did they bring with them all the food, water, and air for themselves and their horses for a 3-year transcontinental mission? No. If they had, they would have needed a wagon train of supplies for every man and for every horse. And of course, each of the wagon drivers and each of the wagon horses would have needed another wagon train, and the wagon drivers and wagon horses of those would have needed further wagon trains and so forth. And not only would this have blown the budget of Thomas Jefferson's America, it would have exceeded the mass of the Earth because it would have gone exponential. Now, so that's not how they did it. What did they do? They hunted their way across, and to a certain extent, they got supplies by trading with Native Americans. But in either case, what they were doing was making use of the resources in the environment they intended to operate. Okay? Why are we going to Mars? We're going to Mars because Mars is the planet that has the resources for life and therefore technological civilization. If we can make use of those resources, the same resources that make Mars interesting is what could make it attainable. So the question then becomes, what is the travel light and live off the land approach to Mars exploration? So that's the question that we set about to answer. So here's the mission sequence chart for Mars Direct. You can launch to Mars every 26 months, little more than once every 2 years. I mean, actually a little less frequency than once every 2 years. So year one on this chart is the first year of active flight operations. I think if we were serious about this, year one on this chart could be, 2024. A little less than 10 years from now. Year three would be 2026. But I'm not into predictions, but that, from the point of view of technology, I think that's entirely doable. But anyway, in a given year, year one, call it 2024 if you like, we launch one of these boosters off the Cape, and then we use its upper stage to throw an unmanned payload, it's unwomaned too, there's actually no one in it at all, on a minimum energy trajectory to Mars. That is, the easiest trajectory to Mars takes 8.5 months to go there. Okay, and it glides on out to Mars, and then when it gets close to Mars, it deploys an aero shield, which uses it to make friction against the Martian atmosphere and aero capture it from an interplanetary trajectory into a bound trajectory around Mars. And then after we check it out and check out the Martian weather, make sure it's a good time to come in for a landing, we then direct it further deeper into the atmosphere. We use the aero shell to plow us down to subsonic speeds. Then we pop parachutes, come down slow, and then put ourselves down softly on Mars with rockets, just like we did with Viking in 1976, or in a different way with an analogous system with Curiosity in 2012. So, what is it that we have landed on Mars? The payload consists of a number of things. The primary object is an Earth Return Vehicle, or ERV. Okay, and what the ERV is, it's a little rocket ship for flying from Mars to Earth. It's going to take a 6-month voyage from Mars to Earth in the final leg of the mission with 4 people in it, so it's got a little cabin up there that can accommodate 4 people in modest quarters for 6 months on the way home. But no one's in it now. Then we have two rocket stages that run on methane oxygen propulsion. However, they are unfueled. They have to be unfueled, or this thing would weigh 4 times as much as it does. It'd be much too heavy for a Saturn V class booster to shoot off to Mars. However, in some of the lower stage tanks that are later going to contain methane, we got about 6 tons of liquid hydrogen, probably in gelled form, and then slung below the vehicle, not shown in this diagram, we got a light truck, like a little pickup truck, runs on a methane oxygen engine, and sitting in the back of that truck, we got a little nuclear reactor with a power of 100 kilowatts. 100 kilowatts is like 130 horsepower, same amount of power that drives a medium-sized car. So we're not talking about some gigantic nuclear power plant that powers a city or an aircraft carrier or a nuclear submarine. We're just talking about a nice little putt-putt nuke sitting in the back of a truck. Okay. And then what happens is we telerobotically drive the truck a few hundred meters away from the landing site, unwinding a cable off the back of it as it goes, and then we put the reactor on the ground, preferably in a crater or a ditch, or just put it on the reverse side of the hill, anything to put a good-sized chunk of dirt between the reactor and the Earth Return Vehicle, and then we turn the reactor on, and now we have power, and we run a pump, and we suck in the Martian air. Mars has got an atmosphere. It's 95% carbon dioxide gas. Carbon dioxide, CO2, can be reacted with hydrogen in the presence of a catalyst to produce methane and water, CH4 methane water H2O. This is a very well understood reaction. It's known as the Sabatier reaction. It dates from the gaslight era. Okay, and this is an exothermic reaction. That is, it doesn't take any energy to drive. It produces energy. And it has a very high equilibrium constant, like 10 to the 7th, which means that it goes to completion in one pass, period. Okay, so There's methane, that's natural gas, it's excellent rocket fuel. We store that in our tanks, that's our fuel to come home. We take the water, we split it via electrolysis, also 19th century chemistry. Oxygen we store in other tanks, that's our oxidizer to come home. The hydrogen we recycle, react with more CO2 to make more methane, and so forth. Okay. Then finally, to get additional oxygen, which is desirable, in order to get the right mixture ratio for the rocket, we have a third reactor in which we take carbon dioxide and we split it into carbon monoxide and oxygen. The oxygen we store as oxidizer, the carbon monoxide we vent as waste. You can do that on Mars. There's no environmental protection agency there, which is a very important positive feature of the planet. Now, and by the way, I should mention that this third reaction is actually going to be demonstrated on the Mars 2020 rover. The experiment has been scheduled for that. Okay. And the other two reactions have been extensively demonstrated in test apparatuses on Earth. Now, so what you've managed to do with all this is you've taken 6 tons of liquid hydrogen from Earth, and you've turned it into 108 tons of methane oxygen bipropellant on the surface of Mars. That's a leverage of 18 to 1. It's like a pioneer, you know, being able to acquire the useful mass of a bison for the transport of the mass of several bullets and cartridges. And that's what makes the whole, or kangaroos in this case. That's what makes the whole mission sing. 95% of the return propellants coming from Mars, 5% came from Earth. Because of that, we can make extra propellant. We only need about 90% of that 108 tons to power the Earth return vehicle. The other 10%, about 12 tons, is available to power ground vehicles using combustion engines, and that's really a good thing because such vehicles have much greater power to mass ratio than you can get with battery-powered systems, which is why they're much more popular here on Earth. And in a frontier environment like Mars, where you really do need the long range, the torque, the hauling capability, the speed, and the all-around muscle you have from having a real car instead of a golf cart, you really want to have one. Okay? But it wouldn't be practical to operate one if you had to bring the fuel from Earth. But because you can make the fuel on Mars, then it becomes practical to use such systems, and this gives you much more mobility, which is, of course, the key to exploration, which is what the whole mission's all about. So, I mean, the point I'm making here is that the ability to make use of local resources is not merely the key to making the mission cheap, it's also the key to making the mission effective, which is equally important because there's no point going to Mars unless you can do something useful once you get there.